Back here in the KGGF studios on this Wednesday morning, I'm Sam Speck. Glad you're with us, live from downtown Coffeyville. Joining us back in studio, Jerry Guerin and Jacob Weber with the K-State Research and Extension offices as we are continuing on with our conversations this morning. You can get in on the action if you have any questions. I know we had a pondering question over the phone lines. That's at 620-251-6909. Phone lines are still open for this because maybe have some questions about this CWD. What was it? CWC or what was it? The
chronic wasting disease.
CWD. That's what we're looking for. Okay, so the chronic wasting disease that we see in deer, and I think we were kind of going through the you know how it can get transferred, how it gets passed. Is that from deer to deer, or is that from deer to different animals?
Typically, just deer to deer. Okay. We're not really seeing this specific prion go to different animals, but it can be. Transferred from mother to fetus as well, and there will be some deer that have symptoms very early on when they get the CWD, and some can be carriers for years before they show signs. So you know, if ticks go from one deer to another, you know, if they go to a watering hole where they drink, and you know, it can be passed very easily.
Yeah,
so
very simply. I mean, it's good though. You know, here regionally in southeastern Kansas, has there been multiple cases? Like, has there been quite a few? Or?
Well, actually, when we look on the map and how it's moving, that western Kansas is being hit pretty hard right now. So if we look on the map, those state or those counties are really starting to have cases. Now in this area we haven't seen any quite yet or verified any yet, but it's just a precaution. So right now wildlife and parks are trying to kind of diminish the results, so they are encouraging to quit feeding deer. Because that's one way that it can be transferred.
Certainly. Well, and it does look like we will have this caller back on the line. Once it gets screened, we'll get them back over here. But yeah, I remember getting, you know, the Facebook notifications of it being in Colorado and northern Colorado and in South Dakota and in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Now the western side of the state looks like it is getting hard. So we will go to the phones here. Good morning, caller. Do you have a question for Jacob and Jerry?
Well, I have a question for Jerry first on the chronic wasting disease.
Yes.
A friend of mine, he feeds deer out in his place out there.
Uh-huh.
They've been doing it for years.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, they know they could identify most of the deer that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and the deer aren't friendly. They don't come up to you or anything. No, just nothing like that. But we're in Labette County. Should we be worried about the chronic wasting disease here in this county?
Well, like I said, it's really starting to move this way. And when we move carcasses, that's one way that it spreads. Also, urine sales. So if he or anybody is buying, you know, doe urine, that's one way that it is spreading also. And then, baiting deer, such as having those corn feeders. That's one way that the disease also spreads. If we just have one infected one come to that feeding site, and it's basically going to spread it to any other deer that comes to that feeding site. So wildlife and parks are currently looking right now if feeding deer should be banned in the state. So that is something that may come around the corner before too long.
Okay, well, thank you. And I have a question for Jake now.
Okay.
Jacob, I transplanted a crepe myrtle yesterday. Now, I didn't want to have to transplant, but my wife decided she wanted a redbud, so I had to dig up my crepe myrtle and put the redbud where it was. So when I transplanted the crepe myrtle, should I cut that back? Last year it didn't bloom. It had lots of buds on it. It looked like it was going to bloom, and it never did. Should I cut that back? I heard a woman say something about last weekend. She cuts hers back every year practically to the ground.
Yep.
Should I do that?
You can, especially since you transplanted it. You probably want to cut some of the top back quite a bit. That'd be okay.
How far back?
Probably as far as you want to.
Because oh, really?
It's hard to kill the crepe myrtle, but you can do it. You can kill crepe myrtle. Cut some of the older wood back and some of the younger wood, small diameter wood. I would leave that. I retain that. And if you want to cut that back, maybe no more than half of the length of the branch. Or just trying to encourage new growth from the base, from the crown.
What about fertilizer? What should I put on it?
Nothing this year. In fact, minimal fertilizer for shrubs, minimal. If your soil is good, your shrubs are okay. You don't have to worry about it.
I live in Labette County, so I'm not worth a crap.
Okay, here's what's going to happen if you fertilize your plants, your shrubs. You're going to do a lot more pruning. It equates to that. The only reason to fertilize is if you really have poor soil.
You know, it's all like this clay.
Okay. So. Well, yeah. Welcome to Kansas. I mean, yeah. Southeast Kansas.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Well, I put a lot of bone meal on because y'all told me to last year, and that seemed to. Hey, my crepe, my lilac bush that hadn't bloomed in 5 years, it's finally blooming this year. I put that bone meal on it, and it took a year for it to break down. I guess, but it's blooming now, so I'm excited about that.
Okay. Well, good. Bone meal's not going to get you into trouble, but. It's not a terribly rich fertilizer. In fact, it's really slowly available.
Exactly.
And application rate, probably a tablespoon per square yard per year would be great. And you could do more than that if you wanted to. But if you do apply it surface, it's just going to stay on the surface. It'll eventually be broken down and probably eventually incorporated into the soil through various soil critters, earthworms, and things like that. But it's as far as that goes, bone meal may be good to work into the soil prior to planting bulbs would be okay. The reason bone meal is used because it has a little higher phosphate content, but the phosphate is very slowly available, and it does have some nitrogen content. But we're talking about, you know, 0.05% nitrogen, maybe not even that much. It's really low.
Okay, so, well, thank you very much.
Yep,
we appreciate you calling in. As anybody else out there has any questions around the garden or regarding this as well? So I think just to kind of wrap up that conversation here, it does sound like they are in the preliminary thoughts of you know, banning feeding deer and things like that.
Doing some things.
Yeah, would you suggest for people that do that over here to just take those preliminary actions now?
Yeah, I think that would be good. Definitely stopping the spread of disease. And if people who do feed deer usually want deer.
Yeah.
So if that's your goal and objective, maybe protect your deer. I will say that sometimes we will find deer with some of these similar activities, usually right after rut or around rut. Sometimes when deer fight, they can actually cause brain abscesses, and that is sometimes thought to be chronic wasting disease, but is not.
It's not.
So that can be the case. So if you are wondering, if you see a deer that you suspect is acting funny, contact your local wildlife and parks. And then also, K-State has actually a testing lab that they are doing chronic wasting disease tests, especially if you are wanting to consume the meat. Remember, this is important not to eat the meat. The test is $28 to do, but it's only a 3 or 4 day turnaround, so they try to get you those results pretty quickly. So if you do have some questions for the K-State testing lab, that number is 866-512-5650.
Very cool. Yeah, just something to keep up to date with, and always, you know, just stick around your phone. Always be around the information when it's there, especially if it does start to creep over into this side of the state.
I remember CWD, crazy wacko deer.
Crazy wacko deer.
Yeah, zombie deer.
Yeah, okay.
That's funny.
And a little question. What's a prion?
So a prion is kind of like an abnormal protein. So like I said, it lives within the spinal column of animals, and then it will migrate eventually to the brain, and that's where we start to see symptoms. They just act kind of crazy.
A protein with a genetic code.
Yes.
Yep, and it's hard to kill or destroy. Let's say can it be described as a living organism or?
You know, I'm not sure. It's just hard.
That's questionable. Whether it's a living entity, like a virus is technically the virus that is spread from one organism cell to another. When it's in the form, that transmission form, it's not really living.
Yeah. And like they said, these prions, there's so many unknowns because they can live in the environment for many, many decades.
Just a protein that gets a mind of its own,
yes,
and decides to go off
literally
on itself.
Yeah. Mind of its own.
Gets a mind of its own. So very cool. Okay, well, again, just stick around your, you know, news sources, information for people that do around here, and again, people that, you know, like venison or, you know, mm-hmm, consume the meat. It's good to get those test kits and just good to be informed if it is in this area. So very cool. Well, Jacob, any new things around the garden right now that you've been up to in the last week?
I got a question about poison ivy here and poison ivy control, destroying it. There are quite a few folks that are poor and unfortunate and cannot get into poison ivy without having serious consequences like blistering, rashes, and aggravations, maybe lasting some people several months. Jeez. Having a reaction to poison ivy, and that's unfortunate. But poison ivy identification, I mentioned it to you off air, poison ivy, and you said, do we have poison ivy around here?
Yeah, I was curious. Cause,
yeah,
I mean, it's,
if that were a cash crop, we'd probably
we'd be making hay right
we
now.
Would, yes, we would. We got plenty of poison ivy here. And, of course, I've been instructed by some individuals as to the proper identification of poison ivy. And, okay, yeah, just listen. But I made it my point early on in my life to be able to identify poison ivy because I was allergic to it before I actually contacted it. I think I had to be because my first contact with poison ivy ended up not so good for me. And after that, I got into it several times, and then after three or four times, I figured I better learn to identify this particular plant, or I'm going to be in trouble forever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we went out to Asheville, they said it was the three-leaf rule, basically, is what to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, leaves of three, let it be.
That
rule.
Exactly.
Actually, the real phrase should be leaflets of three, let it be, because a leaf is actually composed of three leaflets. And it's fairly easy to identify poison ivy with that in mind. The leaflets can be various sizes because the size of the leaf can be anywhere from just maybe the size of a quarter. All three leaflets together would fit on a quarter, up to even one leaf enclosing an entire basketball.
Yep.
I've seen it that large. It all depends on where it's growing. But they all, the main thing they have in common is it's the combination of three leaflets. The side leaflets, the two side leaflets have no stem. The blade is attached right to the petiole, and the center leaflet has a stalk. And then there may be a couple of teeth on the margin of the leaves, maybe on the side leaves and also on the center leaf. There may be a tooth or two, and they're not very sharp. They're kind of like an indentation sometimes, and sometimes they are sharp. Poison ivy may have a very waxy appearance on the surface.
Kind of shiny, shimmery.
Yeah, and especially in sunlight, and it may not. The leaves are attached alternating on the stem, but there is a tree, the box elder maple, that does have a leaf that looks very similar to poison ivy. But it's real easy to tell the difference between that and poison ivy because on the maple, the leaves are attached in pairs opposite each other on the stem. Poison ivy is alternating. The roots, the stem of poison ivy may be covered with a lot of hairy rootlets and when it's attached to the side of the trunk. Or it may be grown as an erect shrub with a very smooth bark. Very confusing. Poison ivy can grow as a vine on a trailing vine on the ground, a climbing vine in a tree, or a shrub. I've seen all forms. And
Jacob, you might talk about the misconception of poison oak.
Poison oak. Okay, poison oak does look very similar to poison ivy. There's a little difference in maybe the leaf shape, but not much. But poison oak has a very similar characteristics of poison ivy, and it doesn't make any difference because if you're allergic to poison ivy or allergic to poison oak species is not common in this area. In fact, I don't think it even exists in this area. It's more of a West Coast plant, California, Oregon, in that region. And then a poison sumac is a totally different looking plant. In all cases, poison ivy is not the same as sumac, which is maybe a very distant relative of poison ivy, but sumac has a red fuzzy fruit, whereas poison ivy has a smooth whitish colored fruit, fruit is in clusters, and you see it typically late summer, early fall. And okay, poison ivy control, do we have time or we need to quit?
We're about to the time there. I did want to put one final note, because when we were speaking when I went out to Asheville or whichever, and they were trying to tell us the identifications, and the big thing that they said too with the three leaf cluster, it's basically the same hue of green between poison oak, but it's like rounded edges versus jagged edges, kind
right.
of. It's kind of a rounded leaf versus like a squared off leaf type
That's
of
right.
thing. So poison oak will be more rounded, poison ivy will kind of more have a point to it, is what they described it as. So
yeah, you'll get the same rash either way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you bump into it, you'll definitely you'll regret that you did. So very cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on this Wednesday, and a big shout out again, Jerry Guerin. This is your final time here with us at the KGGF studios. We have enjoyed all the interviews, and again, good luck on your ventures from here on.
Thank you. It's been very enjoyable.
Again, that's Jacob Weber and Jerry Guerin joining us here this morning on this Wednesday from the K-State Research and Extension offices. We will just do this next week. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
It's the Mighty 690 KGGF.